Michael Ellen will be joining us in a moment now. We're just going from one big thing to another today. The chief political columnist, correspondent, actually, for Politico. And you may have seen this lengthy article about him in the New York Times Magazine section. He does this playbook, which some of you who are political junkies perhaps read every day. It evidently is something that the White House wakes up to and they're in touch with all the time. And Mike is going to join us now to talk about that and to talk about how the news cycle is pretty short and how it's disseminated. And I'm going to start reading this every day now, too, how he determines how he gets his information and feeds all of this and how his influence is so broad that Playbook is – he's frequently a guest on a lot of television programs, analyst programs, as are other people from Politico. Alan is the chief political correspondent for Politico, and he comes – from Time Magazine, where he was their White House correspondent. Prior to that, he spent 6 years at the Washington Post. He covered President Bush's first term, Capitol Hill campaign finance, and the Bush-Gore and Bradley campaigns. We should have him on sometime, Bradley. We haven't. Bill Bradley. At any rate, before turning to national politics, he covered schools and local governments in rural counties outside Fredericksburg, Virginia, for the Freelance Star. And he is with us now, and we'll welcome phone calls for Mike Allen. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org. Hello, Mike Allen. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, hello. Thank you for having us on.
That was one huge article about you, wasn't it? Were you surprised they did such a big piece? You must be one influential guy.
Well, you might say it's a little bit of an overshare. if your mom says it's too much, it's probably too much.
If your mom says that. It gave you the impression that you really are in the know here and that you are everywhere at the same time. You're at every party. You're having every political discussion. Everybody's calling you. Everybody's wanting to know what's going on. They're feeding you information. You're telling other people the information. It made it sound like you're a guy who never sleeps.
We get up early because we feel a big opening in the news cycle is in the morning, that when people are just starting their day, it's a great time for Politico to drive conversation, to sort of take the temperature of newsmakers, to sort of set the table for the talk shows and the cable shows and the briefings that are in the blog posts that are going to come during the day. So we love the morning. We try and win the morning and get our readers off to a good start. And here in Washington, they get Politico in print on Capitol Hill and at Starbucks around town, a pretty good-sized print edition of Politico that is the old-fashioned way.
So everybody goes to Starbucks in the morning?
I don't know if they go only for Politico, but as long as they're there, we figure they might as well get something to read, too.
So it is true, then, that you set the agenda, that the White House reads early on what it is that you have on the playbook and talk show people in terms of booking guests and deciding what they're going to talk about also look at this first thing in the morning.
Yeah, the way that news has changed is that nobody in particular sets the agenda. That even just in the time that I've lived in D.C., that in the morning people would wake up and read the Post and the Times, and that's just what they did. And if they wanted to be really adventuresome, they'd read the Wall Street Journal. And the evening newscasts were where the White House focused most of their attention during the day. Now, for White House, they've taken care of a couple papers and a couple newscasts. Their job is just starting. They're worried about what's going on blogs, what's going on cable, what's going on radio, who's podcasting something. And so that's a great opportunity for people who are newsmakers, because it used to be that if you wanted to plant a story, if you were a campaign, if the Washington Post or AP or New York Times wouldn't take it, you're kind of up a tree, and you had to kind of do what they wanted. Now you can go on a website and post it yourself and send the link around. So there's a lot of opportunities for news consumers, a lot of opportunities for newsmakers, and it provides an incentive for those of us who cover news to be very aggressive about making sure we're serving our audiences. Because if we're not, if they don't trust us, if they don't enjoy us, if they don't look forward to us, if they don't need us, they'll go somewhere else, and they should.
Right. How many people do you have helping to get the news? Because I'm looking at today's playbook, which is fairly lengthy. You've got all kinds of information about, you know, this almost terrorist attack in New York City behind the scenes, how the arrest went down, who bought the car, how they bought the car, et cetera. You've got to have a lot of people, more than just you, on this story, don't you, Mike?
Yeah, no, it's a nice setup there. But no, it's there's a young man who helps me with the morning papers, but Playbook is basically an email I write for my friends. It started out as an email that I wrote for my two bosses, and they spread it around a little bit, and then it grew like Topsy from there. But it's still written exactly the way that it was when I would write to John Harris and Jim Vandehei, who started Politico, and told them, here's what's happening this morning. Here's
really
what we should be covering. Because the idea is that we all wake up and we all want to read the same 10 stories. We're all interested in what Mrs. Obama's doing, or the fact that, you know, Biden's going to be on The View, or the fact that, the Treasury Secretary was on Jay Leno, or the president said he's not going to do immigration, or whatever the story of the day might be. And we're all looking for those same 10 stories, but to find them, you have to read 1,000 stories, go all through all the papers. So we try to do that for you. And so it's written exactly the way it was just when I wrote it for a few people. The Clinton campaign wanted it, and then the Obama campaign, and then the McCain campaign, and then the Romney campaign, and then RNC and the White House and the DNC. And that's sort of how it grew. Now you can just go onto the homepage of Politico.com. There's a little box where you can sign up for it. But we still write it just as if we were only writing it for a few people, because the value of it is for our readers around the country is that they can see what insiders are in Washington are
right
talking about. That this is a way to eavesdrop on the exact same thing that NBC's Chuck Todd is reading, or ABC's Jack Tapper is reading, or the White House Chief of Staff is reading, or the Senate Majority Leader. You can read exactly what they're reading just by signing up for a playbook on Politico.com.
Yeah. Well, I really want to know how the world's oldest person, a Japanese woman, died a week before her 115th birthday. How
Thank
did
you
she?
For reading to the end, I will say that.
How did she live so long, Mike?
That would be the most valuable information in Playbook, I will say that.
It is today. There's no doubt about it. But you also include, I mean, we all kind of like to be on the end, who's having a birthday, and we love to follow the Obama children and the dog. I'm a particular fan of the dog. I don't know what it is in our nature that we'd like to follow that, but certainly people in Washington enjoy that information, and you include that as well.
Yeah, no, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I just was clicking around here and I saw that AP has a book out about presidential pets, and they have a slideshow. So tomorrow, I'll give you a little scoop here. Tomorrow in Playbook, I'm going to link to the slideshow, because I think that people are always interested in dogs. Like the best trafficked YouTubes always seem to have to do with cats, so I figure I'll put up a slideshow about the presidential dog.
And then you said there's a book. Here's an interview for us down the road, a book about presidential pets.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, Chrissy, did you hear that? A book about presidential pets. Not written by Abraham Lincoln. Those would be some of our favorite topics. There are some who criticize Mike, who would say that, you know, it's just too much, that the news cycle is giving us no time to reflect on some of these major stories. It's just, here are the facts. Here's what's happening. Here's what we're going to present. These are the talking points. This is what everybody's talking about. On to the next thing. We don't have time. And these are huge issues. Mm-hmm. Is it too fast?
I think that's a very valid point. And I would just say that I would encourage you to read other things as well. I wouldn't want to depend on any one. I wouldn't want to depend on any one source of news. And you're right about these issues. And so I would encourage people to listen to radio shows and watch some TV and read a magazine and read a book and do all the things your mom told you to do and make Politico one stop there, not your only stop.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to phone calls for you. Our number is 800-486-8655. Mike Allen is our guest, the man the White House wakes up to, according to a very mostly flattering, interesting profile in the New York Times Magazine, April 19th. We go to Brad for our first call. Hi, Brad.
Hi there. I read an interesting article in Time magazine last week about how nowadays fear and balance equates to presenting the Republican view on a topic and then presenting maybe the Democrats' view on a topic, and supposedly that's fair and balanced. But the writer of the article said what news should be doing is trying to find the truth, trying to do investigative journalism and trying to expose the truth. Instead, when they just report on, let's say, the Republican view or what Fox News' take on an issue is, it's not really getting to the truth of the matter. And then, you know, all these arguments that are bogus are never discredited. Mm-hmm. And he said that's a real problem with the news today, is that, you know, they're not really getting to the truth on the issues. And I'd like you to comment on that.
Sure. No, I think that that's a great point. I think that readers want us to add up two and two and say that that's four. And it's not five. And if the White House is telling you it's five, or if the RNC is telling you it's five, they're wrong. And I think that that's a change, an evolution in how news has been covered. I think that we were sort of trained or maybe brought up to more do the way that you were posing it first, which is to say, well, here's two and here's two, and let the reader add it up for themselves. Readers are busy. Readers are sophisticated. Readers have a lot of choices of information. And so I think that they want us to sort of serve as the referee, to sort of call the balls and strikes and to say what is accurate and what is not discredited. But where you'll see a little difference, according to what type of news that you're doing, if you're reading a very straight news account, like from the AP or on the New York Times or on Politico, something that does not take a position, we'll probably give you both the arguments, but we'll also tell you what the reality is, like how it compares with what the person said before, how it compares with government statistics, how it compares with known facts. Because, again, this is what I was saying. If you don't do that sort of thing for readers, they'll go someplace that does, because people just want that kind of service. But and then if you went to a more opinionated source of news, the New Republic or the Weekly Standard, like, they would maybe just sort of give you one argument or not give the other side its say. So we give both sides its say, but we're going to try and add up the facts for you.
Yeah. And tell me about how both sides, thanks very much, Brad, for the call, present those facts. The article indicates that Dan Pfeiffer, the White House communications director, checks in with you maybe 7 to 8 times a day, which is a lot of time, and that you get similar calls from Republicans, and they're trying to drive what the stories are going to be. How do you take that in?
No, that's not right. Neither Dan nor I have that time. We love each other, but we enjoy working together, but we're not, we don't talk that frequently, I will say.
Okay. But what is the nature of the conversation? Is the White House trying to drive certain stories?
Yeah, we want to know what's going on, and they want us to know what's going on from their point of view. So
right.
We ask them what's happening, and sometimes they tell us, and sometimes they don't. That's the way it works. That's how it was under Bush. That's the way it was under Clinton. And you try to develop a relationship of trust where if they tell you that they'll feel they'll get a clear, what the managing editor of the Washington Post, Bob Kaiser, used to say, give the reader one clean shot at the facts. If you're going to give people a clean shot at the facts, they're more likely to trust you, whether they're a reader or a newsmaker.
And people trust you because the indications from the article are that you're a very kind and thoughtful guy, that you remember everybody's birthdays, that you show up for funerals, that you're just there.
But that's not a reason to trust someone, or a reason to, and those things are nice, and I think that it's good to spread good karma in the world, but you trust a reporter if they're going to be honest, if they're going to be sure that, like, the legitimate sides are represented, that their account is going to reflect reality, as well as sort of narrow accuracy, so it's both true and it's accurate. Those are the reasons to trust a reporter, whether you're a reader or a newsmaker.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would trust you because you were a kind person, too. You were looking out for other people.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you.
Well, that would be good, huh? That's what your mom thinks, I'm sure.
Exactly.
Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Mike Allen is our guest this half hour. Featured in a story, New York Times Magazine, April 19, The Man the White House Wakes Up To. We'll take their calls momentarily. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Among our guests on Thursday's program, tomorrow, we do want you to stay tuned for our one-day pledge drive. So just call and give us whatever money you can, please, and we'll have the thing over with in one day, which is always a good idea. Looking ahead to Thursday's programs, two wonderful guests. Alice Walker will be with us. Conversations with Alice Walker, The World Has Changed, is the name of her book, one of the most prolific and important writers of our time. And also, retired Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor will be joining us for a part of Thursday's program. She is very concerned about civics and government, and she thinks that public schools for many years were conscientious and tried to teach these subjects, but recently they have not been taught, and they should be. So Supreme Court Justice retired Sandra Day O'Connor with us on Thursday. All right, two phone calls. Let's go to Bob from Madison. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Thank you for taking me in. I didn't get in on all of the previous questions, but I did catch the last comment or two. And I took one journalism course in college, an undergraduate course, where they taught that editorials should be on an editorial page, and that the news should just be the straight news. And when I read Newsweek or Time magazine, it seems that 90% of the magazines are filled with editorializing, and I don't enjoy it. And Newsweek just went to a new format, and I like it much less than the previous one. But I, for one, like to get the straight news. I'm smart enough, I hope, to make my own decision, to decipher it, and come up with my own conclusions, and I don't always like it when someone else tries to sway me with the type of editorializing that I see. That's just a comment that I have, and thank you very much.
Thanks, Bob.
No, I think that shows why people have lots of sources of news, and they should be free to, just click around and sample places they like and stick with places they trust. And if it doesn't fit with your idea of news, that's why they make apple and cherry pie, as my grandfather would say.
Wait, you must be the ultimate news junkie. I know many in our audience consider themselves that, but what drives you to do this? How did that get instilled in you, Mike?
It's partly because it's exciting, because it's fun, because it's a chance to tell people about what's going on. It's a chance to hold our leaders accountable. And so there are both like selfish reasons and non-selfish reasons for enjoying it. And like a lot of newspaper people, a lot of journalists, I did this going back to the school paper when Betty Brower was the advisor of the school paper, the Crusader Gazette, and we'd go in third period and put the paper together, and Mike Boltzma would write about baseball and so forth. And then I did it again in college, the Ringtone Phi, and Bruce Potter would edit the copy, and Cotton Purrier would do the photos, and it was just a fun thing to do. Jeff Kimball would sell the ads, and then after that, I did the sort of more traditional way to move up in journalism when you and I started out, that you would start in a small market like Wilmington, North sure. Carolina, if you're in TV, or Fredericksburg, Virginia, if you're like me, in a newspaper. And then you go to Richmond, and then Washington, and then New York. And that's just the way the business worked. Now, with online news, it's different. And we have young people who have only had like a couple jobs but are now covering presidential campaigns because the online media opened up new opportunities, is creating new jobs, new organizations, and it's exciting.
We go to Ray from Milwaukee. Hi, Ray.
Hi, I'd like to know the real number of civilian dead in Pakistan from the drone bombings and in Iraq from our ongoing war and in Afghanistan, and then if you could give us the second set of numbers that our government has released.
Yeah, I'm not sure he has all those. Do you cover those kinds of statistics on Playbook? I know political probably would.
I haven't memorized them, but I bet the caller knows them, so why doesn't he just go ahead and say them?
Yeah, thanks, Ray. Do you think that there's been enough coverage of... It's interesting how stories come and go. Iraq and Afghanistan aren't front and center anymore.
I think that's a great point. I'm so glad that you said that. I agree with you completely about that. And if you think... there are more Americans in Iraq than there ever have been, which is an astounding fact. I agree with you that what we see doesn't always... that the news we see doesn't always reflect that.
So, yeah.
We cover the wars pretty aggressively in Playbook because I try to remind people about the Americans that are there and so important to us for the long run. Of course, Afghanistan is very important to this president.
Right. 50 seconds left with Mike Pat from Wauwatosa.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you. Just wanted to say that, you know, what seems to be really, really interesting from an objectivity standpoint with journalism is the fact that, you know, if NPR does a documentary or, you know, a feature on a given societal problem and they're merely describing the facts, that's labeled editorializing. And oftentimes the right will hop on the unobjectivity bandwagon in saying that, well, they're just portraying it as horrible and awful. There is an upside and everything like this. It's like, I'd like to hear about, you know, the new objectivity that's going on in the media right now, which seems to be this balance for sake of balance and forgetting that the role of the truth in the news. And I'll take Mike's comment off.
All right, what's the role of the truth, Mike?
Yeah, well, no, I think that's a very legitimate question, and our readers, this goes back to the question of do readers want us to add up the news or just... give them the facts without any context or any way to evaluate them. Something the president talks a lot about is the importance of context in the news. A lot of times he feels like we report headlines without explaining like where they came from or where they're going. So a skilled news person, even with very limited space or time to work with, will help you understand like what's going on with the news and will... explain it and explain what went before and give the full casualty counts as that other reader wanted. And the most skillful network news reports, which are only a minute and a half to 2 minutes, which I think is only, you know, a couple of words, but the most skillful network news reports do all that. So there's no excuse for a newspaper writer who has maybe twice that space or more to not do the same thing. So I think your listeners clearly are holding us to a high standard, and I think they should.
Yes, they should. Mike, thank you so much for being with us.
It was a great treat. Thank you for the great questions and the fun conversation.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Mike Allen, he is the chief political correspondent for Politico, worked for Time Magazine, White House correspondent for a number of years, spent 6 years at the Washington Post, where he covered President Bush's first term. He's covered Capitol Hill, campaign finance, and the Bush Gore and Bradley campaigns of 2000. He's featured in an extremely interesting piece in the New York Times Sunday Magazine section that looks at the man that the White House wakes up to. And that's April 19th. Did I say that? April 19th. He also writes this playbook. If you haven't read it, it's nice to, because we've had this conversation, be interesting for you to go to the website now and look at playbook to see what he's... It's a lot of work to write all of this every day, isn't it? It's not just political. It's the world's oldest person who died and some things about who's having dinner with whom. And it's a fun read. Okay. Thanks to Chrissy Peace for producing this very interesting hour. That one flew by. Good guess. Michael Lewis and Mike Allen, and thanks to Chrissy for answering phone calls as well. Tomorrow, we do want you to listen to us, and we have a one-day pledge drive tomorrow, so please listen and pledge if you can. We'll be talking about politics, and we'll be talking about books the second hour of our program, so we ask you to listen to our show with pen and paper in hand, and also with book suggestions, hour number two, so we can go back and forth and give all kinds of suggestions for great reading for all of us this spring and summer months and fall and winter as well. Again, I want to remind you that on Thursday, Alice Walker will be with us. She has a new book, The World Has Changed, Conversations with Alice Walker. And We will also be speaking with retired Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, and we will also be speaking with a member of the Wisconsin State Supreme Court about civics education, which both of our guests feel is very, very important and has been neglected. So that'll be a really good show as well. Thanks for listening, everybody, and for your calls for all of our guests. Thanks again to Chrissy for her work and to Rhonda Fanning for producing, and we'll be with you again tomorrow.